Click kaya959.co.za.
This is how we do it.
To download the Point of View podcast.
Rhythm and beats.
On Point of View.
And of course, we start gearing up for the weekend with some music. And Dr. Sheldon Rochalil is in studio with us. Hello.
Hi, Pamela.
So nice to have you. So, we're celebrating Prince today.
Yes.
And that is because?
Because he passed away in 2016 on Monday. So, ironically, you know, my
side, your favorite artist,
one of my all-time favorite artists, and you know, the Pope passed away on Monday as well.
Yes.
So,
oh, wow.
Yeah, so both passed away.
I didn't see that parallel.
Yeah,
oh, interesting.
And you know, I'm the Pope of Rock, so of course, as the Pope of Rock, I need to have a Holy Trinity, and Prince happens to be one of the Holy Trinity, and so.
Wow, well,
maybe one day I'll also pass away on the same day.
As Prince.
No. As Prince and the Pope.
And the Pope. Oh, yeah. Wow.
So all of us will be.
Don't say that. Oh, my gosh.
But Prince passes. So Prince, you know, like the Holy Trinity of rock for me is Prince, Michael Jackson, and Madonna. The entertainer, the
really?
Musician. Yeah. And
Madonna is there.
Yeah. The businesswoman.
For you. Oh, okay.
Yeah. Because no one can handle business like that woman. Anyway, so, but 2016, which is when Prince passed away, was the weirdest year in music history. Like, if you look, I call it the music industry annus horribilis, which means like the worst year in the history of music. For me, of all the years that I've been observing, in that year, other than Prince dying, David Bowie passed away. Prince B, the lead singer of PM Dawn, passed away on that year. Natalie Cole, Leonard Cohen, Frank Sinatra Jr., Glenn Frey of the Eagles, George Michael, Mendoza passed away on that year. Pete Burns of Dead or Alive, George Martin, the Beatles producer, Rene Angelil, who's Celine Dion's manager and husband, Maurice White of Earth, Wind & Fire, Merle Haggard, the country artist, Leon Russell, Robert Stigwood, the guy who managed Eric Clapton. All of those people passed away in the same year.
Wow.
I mean, and a lot of musicians pass away in a year. But these were all very iconic musicians that passed away in the same year.
It's quite a list.
Anyway, this most beautiful girl in the world came in an interesting time in Prince's career. 1994, he had just changed his name from Prince to an unpronounceable symbol.
Yeah.
Which was a hybrid of the male and the female signs mixed together. And the story goes that Prince was very unhappy in his record contract with Warner Brothers and decided that the only way he could escape his contract was to change his name, because the contract was between him
and Prince.
And
Prince and the record label.
As opposed to Prince and this symbol.
Hmm.
So he changed his name and started releasing music under this name. And this was one of the first songs. And
so
this,
interesting.
And so this song was included. Well, the first time it was ever performed was at the Miss USA pageant, later performed at the World Music Awards. And it was supposed to be a dedication to his upcoming wife. He only married once, to a woman called Mate Garcia, who was a dancer and appeared in some of his music videos. And so the song was supposed to be a dedication to her. A very interesting music video with all of these ladies appearing in the music video. And a distinct shift from what he usually performed, which is very funk-orientated music. This was more like a pop ballad.
Mm-hmm.
And very interesting, the shift of music. Anyway, and so this is the song that came out. I thought it was a brilliant song. It was number 3 in the United States, and it was incidentally number 1 in the UK, which is weird for an artist like Prince to get such traction in the United States. But he was very popular in the UK.
Yeah.
But he was very popular in the UK, and he even landed up winning the Brit Award for Best International Artist in the UK for a period of time.
Did the record label give him any trouble with having changed?
So the thing that happened was in 1992, Warner Brothers and Prince signed a $100 million six-album deal. And this was 1994. I think two albums had been released at that point. And then Prince decided to change his name. Warner Brothers still held him to the original contract. So they were like, you still owe us another four albums. And so he said, well, I'm not releasing any more stuff for you. But Prince had this vast archive of works. So what Warner Brothers started doing was they started compiling and assembling records with the content that they had access to and releasing it anyway against his will. Mm. And so Prince said, okay, fine, but and then I want a disclaimer on these albums saying I did not approve of these albums. They were not meant for public consumption. Mm. And so four albums were released in that period between 1994 to 1999. Four albums were released all against Prince's will, but at the same time, Prince was releasing work on the side. Mm. He was one of the first artists to, and that was the big thing with Prince. I mean, he signed his contract in 1977 with Warner Brothers. He was 18 years old, and he felt that they really took advantage of him in that contract because he didn't own any of the rights to his publishing. So this became a bone of contention later on in his career. On the first album, he played all 27 instruments on the album. He produced all the songs and he sang on the album. So produced, played all the instruments, sang, and wrote all the songs. He was one of the first artists to do it on such a scale. Other people followed him, like Terence Trent D'Arby also followed in those footsteps, and Lenny Kravitz also followed in those footsteps. But they signed him on mainly because this guy was a cheap, like, virtuoso musician, songwriter, producer, and could play all the songs, do the arrangements, do everything. But unfortunately, for the first album, he went three times over the budget that they had allocated for the first album. Anyway, things started breaking down. The relationship between Warner Brothers and Prince started breaking down, and Prince was like, I can't be in this contract anymore, even though he signed that 1992 contract for... was a contract for $100 million. Mm. He started walking around town with the word slave written on his face, basically to say, although he was getting paid all of this money, he was still being super controlled by the music business machine, and eventually changed his name. He was one of the first pioneering artists to start releasing music on the internet. People were not doing that in 1994 or 95. And then he also became very vigilant about who would release his music. So he would not release an album with the same record company twice. And they were all licensing deals. So he had full control of the albums, and the record companies just manufacture the albums and distributed it. That's all they did.
On the street, on the air, on the go.
Download the Kaya app.
Download the Kaya app.
He's always got to leave a little quirky thing.
Of course. You know, that's what I love about Prince. Prince, from the Holy Trinity of rock, was the musician entertainer. Like, what I loved about Prince is that he always would take you on a journey. There'd be like a journey that you go on with Prince on every album. So every album, there was a thing about it. And that was the genius of Prince. It was like not just about making songs, but like making songs that are taking you on a musical journey. The first, ironically, the first song, When Doves Cry, 1984, and the next song, Musicology, 2004, so 20 years apart. So the first song, When Doves Cry, very risque music video where he appears naked out of a bathtub and crawling on the ground, whatever. Very interesting. It was his from his sixth album, Purple Rain. And Purple Rain is probably the most iconic Prince album ever. And it was done, basically it was a soundtrack for a movie called Purple Rain, which was like semi-autobiographical. And at that stage in Prince's career, he decided that what he wanted to do was he wanted to explore movie making. Mm. He'd done the music thing. He'd been in the music business since 1977. So this is like 7 years later, and he wanted to explore new avenues, do movies, experiment with that kind of thing. And he does this movie called Purple Rain. It becomes like a cult favorite movie. He uses it as an opportunity to expose a lot of the people that were working with him in the movie. And it eventually wins an Oscar for Best Original Score. Prince wins the Oscar for Best Original Score. Now, that means that Prince was not only producing music, like popular music, he was producing score music, which is tantamount to like the classical music equivalent to modern music, because you're producing music that's telling a story within a movie. So it's a great, much greater picture. So it just indicates like the level of virtuosity of this specific musician. Anyway, he... what's very interesting about Purple Rain is that it's at the time musicians, especially in the 1980s, one of the prominent features in pop music at the time, and specifically within funk music, which was the idiom in which Prince was making music. The bass lines in songs were very important. But When Doves Cry does not have a bass line at all. And what happened was, he was speaking to one of his friends, Jill Jones, a musician, and they were talking about this bass line, and he was like, this is just too conventional, like this bass line. So the song had a bass line, and he was like, it just makes the song too conventional. I'm going to remove the bass line. And he removed the bass line, and this song went to number one on the charts. It was his fifth number one single. His first number one single. And the whole album then became this iconic album. And Purple Rain itself, the song, was inducted into the Grammy Hall of Fame 25 years later. So a brilliant album. Now we fast forward to musicology, and this is 2004. It was from his 20th album. All in all, Prince released 40 albums, which is a massive amount of work. And apparently when he died, he had 2,000 songs in the archives, which meant that they could release an album a year for the next 20 or 30 years, because that's how much material there was out there. A few have been released since then. Anyway, this song, although it didn't do commercially as well, it went to number 120 on the US charts. It landed up winning a Grammy Award for Best Traditional R&B Performance. And you can hear in the song that it's an ode to James Brown.
Yeah.
And the origins of funk music. And if you listen to Prince, you hear James Brown.
Yeah, you do.
Because Prince is a modern incarnation of what James Brown started off with. The amazing thing about Prince, though, is that he managed to find a formula that brought funk into the mainstream, because you started adding elements of popular music and R&B and making it a because if you listen to funk in its original form, it's very particular to a very specific audience, and not everyone will appreciate funk music. But the genius of Prince was that he was able to create a version of funk that was palatable to a much wider audience. And that was the secret behind Musicology, which was also the name of his 20th album. And that's that.
On the street, on the air, on the go.
Download the Kaya app.
Download the Kaya app.
You know, I don't know what people heard, but at least it wasn't bad.
Well, this was our side hustle here. This Michael Jackson song. Because people were like, why Michael Jackson? And also, the reason why we're not focusing on Purple Rain, the song, is because when I choose songs for this show, I don't want to choose songs that everyone's heard a million times before. And Purple Rain is such an obvious one to learn. Like people think of Prince, they think of Purple Rain. So I want to educate people with new stuff.
People are wondering right now whether to love you or hate you.
They can go listen to other people if they want to listen to the common songs.
So this collaboration with Michael Jackson, obvious for me.
Yeah. So the whole thing was, Michael Jackson was working on the Bad album. This was the first song from that Bad album, 1987. And he wrote the song with the intention of doing a duet with Prince. Anyway, yeah, that was the intention. That was the starting point. And the song is actually semi-autobiographical, well, biographical, because it was about a boy that was in the ghetto and then landed up going to a private school and then landed up coming back into the ghetto. And because of the jealousy of his friends in the ghetto, they landed up killing him. Mm. And so that's what this song is actually about. But anyway, so the idea was always to do this duet with Prince, and Quincy Jones had, so 1987, this is soon after We Are the World, and Quincy Jones approaches Prince and says, listen, Michael wants to do a duet with you. I think this is a great song. This will be a good thing for you guys to do together. And Prince says, what is the first line of this song? So he goes, your butt is mine. And he's like, who's going to sing this line to whom? Because I'm not singing this to you, and you're not singing this to me. So I'm not doing this song. He turned it down, and he said, you know what? This song's going to be a hit with or without me. You don't need me for this. So he turned down Michael Jackson and offered him another song called Wouldn't You Love to Love Me? And Michael Jackson turned that down. So now they had an opportunity to both turn each other down. And this rivalry between Michael Jackson and Prince persisted for many years, but I think between the two of them, they were fine.
They really loved each other's work.
Exactly.
That's what
And also, I mean, Michael Jackson was obsessed with Prince his success.
Of course.
So he used to send spies to go and see what Prince was doing in concert. So this thing was playing out. I think they had mutual respect for each other.
I think so.
And anyway, so this song went to number one. It was intended to be a duet, but it never landed up becoming one. And the song before that was 1991's Cream. This is where I came in. Because prior to that, I was a bit young. I'd heard the Prince songs in the background, but I didn't really get it. Mm. But when I heard Cream, I was like, this is the jam. I love this guy. The music video, the storytelling, the everything. This song became Prince's fifth number one hit single. And it featured a band called the New Power Generation. Now, Prince always had a backing band. Although he could play all the instruments
himself,
he'd always have... eventually, after a while, he started having a backing band, a band that would play on all the albums. So he had the New Power Generation, he had the Revolution, he had the Time, Madhouse. And what he would do is he would spin those different bands off into different acts. Mm. So he would land up not singing for that band, and then he would release albums with those artists. And the whole motivation behind, so he did The Time, The Revolution, Madhouse, Third Eye Girl, NPG Orchestra, Vanity Six, Apollonia Six, and Sheila E. All of those artists would have separate album releases, separate content, and the whole thing was that Prince was so prolific in his writing that he felt that releasing material as Prince, and you know the industry how it is, once you've created that brand, you can't veer from the brand. Mm. That is what it is. Mm. And so he felt that the Prince brand was too limiting for him because he could only do Prince music. Mm. And one of the reasons why I started falling out with Warner Brothers was because they wouldn't let him explore the full ambit of his creativity as the Prince brand. Mm. So by exploring it through bands like the NPG, The Revolution, The Time, Third Eye Girl, whatever, he could explore different genres, he could explore different types of music, and he could fully immerse himself in the full ambit of his creativity. Mm. And that was the motivation for all of these different bands, all of them with different content, and then the 40 albums that he did himself. So he had a huge body of work that he worked on in his lifetime.
We're going to play out with
Raspberry Beret, which actually is from before my immersion into the Prince story, but post getting into Prince, this became one of my favorite songs. 1985, a psychedelic pop song, went to number two in the United States. It was held off the number one position by Duran Duran's A View to a Kill, which was a James Bond theme. But it just shows, like, once again, another element of Prince. Interestingly enough, in 1988, 3 years later, he released this album called Love Sexy, just to show his innovation. The whole album was released as one track. And the reason why he did that was because he felt that he wanted the audience to listen to the music the way he had written it. And he felt that if he did it in tracks, they would just skip from one song to the next. And by forcing them to listen to one track, he forced them to listen to the song, to the album as one unit, which is maybe we'll explore that in a future show.
We should. Thank you, Sheldon.
Thank you very much.
And we'll see you next week. Thanks, folks. We'll be back on Monday. Actually, I know it's a holiday, but we are back on Monday at 8.
Click kaya959.co.za.
This is how we do it.
To download the Point of View podcast.